Welcome to the Marketing Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Barker, and my guest today is Michael Cole. He is the VP of Marketing at Everflow, a partner marketing platform that helps clients manage multiple performance-driven partnerships. These include affiliates, influencers, media buying channels, and apps. On today's episode, he dives into his affiliate marketing background and how Everflow helps brands identify partners that provide the most value. Before I start my conversation with Michael, I would like you to know more about our services. We help businesses manage their content marketing, influencer marketing, online PR, and more. You can also visit our website at shanebarker.com to get more details. And now let's kickstart the conversation with Michael. All right, you guys. Hey, we're excited. We have Michael Cole today from Everflow on the podcast. Super excited to have you on. Once again, man, thanks for, I know we've been going back and forth for a little bit, and I'm excited about having you on the podcast today.
I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, cool. For those of you that are listening to the podcast that don't know about Michael, we're going to go ahead and do a little backstory on him and kind of ask him a few questions about, you know, where he grew up and some other fun things. And then we'll jump into Everflow and some of the other cool features and things that they've got going on. So, Michael, why don't you give us a breakdown here? So where did you grow up at?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go way back, I grew up in right next to Yosemite in this little tourist town called Oakhurst, California.
We just drove through there. I was there. Actually, we got evacuated. I was actually in Yosemite. This was maybe four months ago. We got evacuated. In fact, we drove through that city and I thought, God, that would probably be awesome to live there. Now you might have a different opinion because you lived there the whole time. So, I mean, I want to get your opinion on that.
Definitely. I'm a big city person now. Like growing up in a small town, like I always had this like deep fear, but it was pretty irrational that I would just never leave. Because there's always some people that never leave your like small town and you're like, I want to do something more than that. But yeah, growing up in Oakhurst was super interesting, especially because my parents are video game designers. So we have this tourist town. There's nothing in this town except tourist stuff. And there used to be a video game company called Sierra Online. So anyone who's familiar with like really old school computer games may have heard of this company. What's interesting about this company is, again, small town. This company, if you're familiar with video games, there's two major companies now, Blizzard and Valve. Both of these companies were originally co-owned by Sierra Online.
Really?
So it's like this small town, small company, but like they own the biggest video game companies in the world for a long time. And so my parents were video game designers for one of their first four major adventure games, in this case, Quest for Glory. And the way that company came about was really fascinating. So they came up with this idea for creating like a graphical adventure game before any graphics had really been in video games. So they made one of the first video game with graphics. And they said, if we sell more than 100,000 copies, like we're going to move to Bass Lake next to Yosemite because that's where they always wanted to live. That game sold millions. It spawned Sierra Online, which became this huge video game company, and then eventually got bought up by a massive French conglomerate. So yeah, it was a weird childhood and the combination of small town and like
video
big
games.
Town company.
Dude, that is awesome. That is awesome. So how big was your family?
So I was an only child, which means I'm perfect for COVID because I'm very used to keeping myself entertained with few friends and no one I can see. I used to live a mile down a dirt road from like the next neighbor. So even seeing friends was like 7 miles away, which means it didn't happen that often.
So you are built for COVID. You're like, hey, this is like for you. Like, this is it. This is what we do all the time anyways. Like I'm used to not being around.
I don't understand what's the big deal.
We're going to need you to do some training because I know people are losing their minds right now. You're like, listen, dude, I made it through. It was my childhood. Not a big deal. And so that's rich. I was going to ask you some interesting facts about growing up, but it's got to be the fact that your parents were both video game produce video games. That's pretty awesome, man. And then where you live now? Are you in the Bay Area now? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just in Oakland, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, Oakland's an awesome city. Yeah, that's not too far. I'm in Sacramento, so I'm only about a hop, skip, and a jump from you. Yeah, not too far. So you were going to say something interesting about your family, about growing up with video games. Like,
Oh yeah, just the video game industry, especially back then, was like the worst industry to work for in a lot of ways, because like you're talking about the early days of video game companies, and the way that they hired were they would hire suits to be the managers, and video games were so new, none of those suits like had any passion for video games, etc.
The
So like
worst.
it's famous for like crunch mode and for like the Dilbert type bosses that had no idea what was going on, but would be like, why is it not done next week? So a lot of the early games were very, very buggy because they always had like a hard deadline where they just had to release it no matter what, no matter how broken the game was, it always had to come out. So I was like, I do never want to be on like the programming side. Like it's always better to be on like the business side because then you have more control over your own destiny. It turns out that all those engineers ended up becoming the managers and like tech CEOs and stuff. So it was a wrong inclination, but at that time it was like not for me. I don't want to be told what to do by someone who doesn't know what they're talking about.
That's the worst. I mean, I don't care what industry you're in. It's when you have somebody come in that has no idea about your industry, that they're trained, they have an MBA, and that's awesome. But it's like you've never been in the industry, and yet you're trying to tell me what to do. You've never been in the trenches, but yet you know how to run this. And that's the worst, especially with timelines. It's like, well, just get it done in 2 weeks. And it's like, have you ever designed a video game? Like, do you understand what it takes to do this? Like, this isn't like me just going home for a half an hour and clicking a few buttons and then, pressing enter, and then all of a sudden it goes live. So I can imagine your parents are probably like, oh, this sucks for right now, until good things happen. And then you get people in there that understand what's going on. I think that's awesome. And
Yep,
then,
and have respect
yeah, that's the
for
deal, right?
expertise.
Yeah, and understand it, right? And have an understanding of like, hey, I understand this is going to take a little while longer, not a problem. Or hey, can you make this deadline by this time? Yes, I can. Great, then we'll stick with that. So where did you go? Where did you go to college?
So I went to college at UC Santa Barbara, which I highly recommend is one of the most useful schools to go to for success in life because UC Santa Barbara, famous for its being a party school, and it turns out like knowing how to drink, be sociable, and still get stuff done is like the most valuable like tech industry skill out there.
You heard it here first. That's what you got to do. Now, and it's funny. So I know State Street. So I've been to Santa Barbara quite a few times, and it's absolutely beautiful. So my son actually lives in Ventura, so he's not too far from there. But I will tell you, I went to one of those colleges I went to was Chico, and so Chico was kind of the same deal. Chico wasn't as much to do as Santa Barbara. Like Santa Barbara is just beautiful right there on the beach, and there's all kinds of fun stuff. Chico was, but it definitely kind of got you like, hey, you're gonna have to have some fun, which is that's what we're doing. And but you also got to get some stuff done. You got to get the good grades. So I would definitely see Santa Barbara as a place that was actually on my son's list, some places to take a look at, because it's like Santa Barbara, like it doesn't. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. Just such a nice place to be, and the craft beer scene there, and just the overall scene, food scene, just everything about it is awesome. Probably a little
Yeah, that's great.
expensive for a college student, but that's awesome. It's a good place to be. And then, what was your first job out of college? What did you do? And that's a whole another thing. What was your major? That was something interesting.
Oh yeah, so I mean, I always wanted to be involved with startups. So I actually majored in business economics with an accounting emphasis because my original plan had been to go join an accounting firm. Be so bored out of my mind that it would force me to create a startup. That was my original plan. As it ended up happening, instead, I got a job with a marketing agency. I was the only applicant. So I managed
Boom,
to get
winning.
hired, which was great.
Yeah.
So I was at a marketing agency doing affiliate management for like the first 5 years out of college. And it was sweet. Like, I mean, I'm sure you know the affiliate space really well in terms of like the players and stuff. Like obviously Santa Barbara's where CJ was.
Yeah.
Almost all of the like major early affiliate marketing stuff all centered around Santa Barbara. So we had access to amazing clients, and it's really funny looking back at it now because we are like this little boutique agency in Lompoc, which is like 45 minutes north of Santa Barbara. And yet like for clients we had both BigCommerce and Shopify. We launched both their affiliate programs. And then we had like some companies that were like just in the starting ground, like Quest Bar, which was like this protein bar that is
Yeah.
now a billion-dollar company. So we had just amazing clients. And from like the very beginning, I was able to, because it was like a two-person company when I joined it, and I was a second person, which means that I was hands-on, like launching all these affiliate programs. So I have a really strong background in understanding like what actually works and appreciating like where things have started, what has continued to work all of these years, and then like what's really cool about what we do at Everflow that is going to solve a lot of the problems that I experienced back then.
And this is another thing, but didn't you also study Japanese?
Yeah, so I minored in Japanese, which was definitely really fun. It's a languages are a really great thing to study in college, just because if you think speaking in public is hard in English, once you're doing it in a foreign language, it's 10 times harder. So yeah, it makes it a lot less stress to talk, to present in person in English.
Well, it's funny. So I looked at Japanese would be hard. So I did. Yeah. I went to Costa Rica and studied abroad Spanish. So my Spanish was proficient. Now I've probably lost a lot of it over the last 20 years because, you know, I just haven't used it as much. But Japanese, man, that's kudos to you, because that's not an easy language to learn. And the fact that you're able to put that in as a minor, that's awesome. That's definitely, that's outside of the spectrum of I think what most people would do in regards to minor. That's awesome. You challenge yourself like that.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. I got to study abroad for 6 months in Japan, which was like such a interesting and fascinating experience, because so much of what we like Japanese colleges, just a side note, are very interesting in that, I'm sure you've heard that like Japanese like high schools are famous for all these exams and like how hard it is. So once you finish the exam period, you get into college, you're basically just smooth sailing for 4 years. Like Japanese colleges are actually like really easy. What matters is what college you got into in the first place, more than anything you do in college. Like the standard, like the challenge level like drops off as soon as high school's over.
It's that test, right? There's like a big test that they have to take. And it's like either you make it and you do great, or you don't make it and you're not doing great.
Yeah. So, but once you make it, you're like, it's easy mode, which is really interesting. And then the other thing that was just crazy was that like at the you basically have to get a job out of college that's going to be your job for your life in Japan. So when you, like the students, as they got to their fourth year, if they didn't get a good job, they would literally just fail the year and retake that year to try and get into like one of these big firms. And so there was this like really interesting feeling of like sort of hopelessness, because they knew like this is going to be my entire life being decided by this one thing. And like, I may not get another opportunity for a good job ever again. So it was really interesting, like that sort of mix of like just having to accept like this sort of like salaryman lifestyle. It's one of the things that really makes you appreciate like American like entrepreneurial culture, where you can always try something, fail, and hop onto a new thing. Like you still have great opportunities 10 years down the line. Whereas like that was the general feeling there, is like they may not get an opportunity if it doesn't happen now, which is pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah, no pressure. You're like, hey, it's like either this right here is like, this is either going to define your whole life, whether you're successful or not, but you know, do what you want. You can study if you want to figure it out or fail and go back and try to figure it out again. So that's crazy. So what I wanted to talk about is, because I obviously have a deep background in affiliate marketing, and I wanted to talk about Everflow. So what I want to talk a little bit is more like the traditional marketing or affiliate marketing. And then how did you start working for Everflow? Like, how did that work? So I know you had, once again, you talked about having these phenomenal clients and working with some really big companies that ended up becoming billion-dollar companies and working on their affiliate programs from the beginning. So how did you apply at Everflow, and how did that all work out?
Yeah. So the company I was with prior to Everflow, called Bold Screen Media, they were a video ad tech company, and I actually consulted for a while to suggest like them launching a mobile user acquisition side, which is what I had been doing prior to that. So I actually joined Bold Screen. I launched their mobile UA side from scratch using Everflow, which I was familiar with before I even joined Bold Screen. So I started up the mobile side. I managed to basically do everything inside of Everflow to grow it from scratch up to like, I think it was like on market for about like 6 to 8 million for the year that I ended up leaving to join Everflow. So I did a really good job. I built up a team there. But it's one of the realities of the Bay Area that I will never be able to afford a house here. on like just a high paying salary at an ad tech company. Like the only way you can afford a house here is an IPO. And that requires like a tech platform or something else that just goes gangbusters, is worth like $1 billion. And then I can actually buy something, because the economics of her houses, when you include property taxes and stuff, is crazy. So it's a very mercenary reason for looking for a new opportunity. And the way it came about was the classic UC Santa Barbara style of like just a night out drinking. They wanted me to join Everflow. It made sense. So I spent like 2 months finding replacements, getting a new manager at Boldscreen for the mobile side, and very sorrowfully making that transition. Fortunately, it worked out well for both sides, and like I'm still super close to that company, but it was a really tough decision. But again, like you need a rocket ship to stay in the Bay Area if you want to have like a home. Isn't which it is crazy? Really intense.
It is. You know, it's funny. So and we're seeing this here in Sacramento, because I actually flip real estate in Sacramento, so it's a whole other story. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, the flood of Bay Area folks that are coming to Sacramento and wherever, because they can all do remote living, and it's so expensive mm-hmm. in the Bay Area. Now, I know the prices are going down a little bit, but it's still ludicrous. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous. And the fact that you have to IPO to buy a house, I mean, just really think about that. Let that sink in. Any other place in, you know, in at least the United States, you could live in 98% of the places and afford to live wherever you wanted in a nice place. And then San Francisco's in that top 2% with probably New York and, you know, Marin County, all these different places. You're like, it's just so expensive. But all right, man, we'll get you in an IPO. We'll get you that money so you can get that house. That'll be the plan. So tell us a little bit about Everflow, because obviously you've been working with Everflow before you actually started working at Everflow. Give us a little breakdown. Like, what exactly do you do? What's the premise of it?
Yeah, so Everflow is a partner marketing platform. And what that means is that it's for managing all of your performance partnerships, whether those are affiliates, influencers, referral partners, strategic relationships, or even like tracking all of your media buying channels. And so like that broad umbrella matters for a lot of stuff. For one thing, like the biggest problem with affiliate marketing is from the agency perspective is that like you're so siloed from all of the other marketing efforts at your clients. And so you're always fighting about, does affiliate marketing deserve any credit at all? Or should the very expensive paid marketing that they do internally get all the credit? So things like that are constant challenges. And what's really cool about Everflow is you can have all your performance marketing in a single platform. Everything's tracked together. You're seeing not only the performance results, the revenue from that, but also all of the engagement events, all the stuff around that. And because you have everything in one place, you can actually do an apples to apples comparison of like, where does affiliate A provide value versus influencer B versus my internal media buying versus like my, say like agency's media buying. Everything in one place means that you actually can really understand how everything provides value.
Which is huge. Right. It comes down to attribution. It comes back to like, where, you know, what's working. I put out marketing dollars. That's always the big thing. People go, you know, I'm spending whatever, $100,000 and it's bringing in this. And I know 50,000 of it's working. I just don't know which 50,000 of it's working. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's always the hardest part, is like coming up with like, does this make sense to continue this? And how are we looking at that? And I love the fact that you guys pull in, you know, influencer marketing and affiliate marketing. Is it mainly done through like coupons? Like, kind of break that down a little bit. Like, how is, like, when we talk about attribution?
Yeah, sure. So the primary way we do attribution is a thing called direct linking. And the easiest way to understand it is it works a lot like Google Analytics. So rather than using the traditional redirect link that's common in affiliate marketing, you actually just have the like partner influencer sending traffic to, for example, like Nike.com, PID equals 9, if they're partner 9 in your Everflow system. When they get to Nike, our system will have a JavaScript on that page that will detect the fact that PID 9 is there. And then we'll start tracking that click for that partner. And then when the purchase happens, we'll reward partner 9 inside of your Everflow platform. What's really important, opens up a lot of doors, is one, it's really easy for all types of like publications, influencers and stuff to link without understanding much. And B, it works for media buying. So with media buying, they don't really allow redirect links. It gets flagged all the time in Google and Facebook if you're trying this. But because in this case, they're just sending them straight to the advertiser's website, you don't have to worry about anything getting flagged because it's actually going to the legitimate placement. And then we're starting the tracking there at that point, which means that all this data is able to be tracked from these different channels in one place. So, yeah, so that's one. Lost. Yeah. And then for influencers, you want to work the way that is best for them. So then you have like coupon tracking, which is pretty simple. And one thing we do on top of that that's really cool is like tracking code URLs. So say you assign promo code Instafluencer to one of your publishers. When you do that, it actually creates a custom destination page using like your internal tracking domain. So say it could be like go.nike.com/the influencer's promo code. And when that page is visited, it will redirect them to the normal landing page and start the tracking process. So that's really good for influencers that use video or Instagram where they can't easily link, but they can do like a quick shout out or go to this page to support my show.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I think that's so important because I know your guys' software because obviously we did a review a few months ago that's indexing well with that in regards to the review type side of things. And that's why I was excited about having you on the podcast, because for me, it's like, hey, people have to know about this, right? And understand how to use it. And once again, that the understanding attribution has always been one of the biggest challenges. And I think this is a solution for that. So how is Everflow different than other affiliate platforms out there? Like what is the differentiator? Because obviously there's quite a few affiliate platforms out there, but you guys are not just an affiliate platform. I think that's the differentiator, but like what makes you different?
Yeah, so first it's like, what is the ecosystem of companies out there? So there's basically two types of companies. You have affiliate networks, things like CJ and Impact, where the program lives inside of their platform. And what's really useful about say like a CJ or Impact is that they have these giant affiliate marketplaces. So you can recruit from like say 5 million affiliates. So that's category A. Category B is companies like Tune or Cake, where they are giving you an internal white label platform where you can manage your advertisers and your partners, etc. Everflow sort of, it's an ongoing process, obviously, but we are trying to have the best pieces of both. And in terms of like features and functionality, we're already like massively more advanced than any of them, in part due to the fact that like the origins of the company. So let's talk about the origins of the company in a little bit, but just to finish this. So basically like when you have Everflow, not only do you have your own white label platform, so you're owning all the relationships, both on the advertiser and on the publisher side, whether those are affiliates or influencers, et cetera. So you have your own platform. You have the ability to have a marketplace to recruit from our recommended tier 8 affiliates. And the way that we structured that is quite a bit different than CJ or Impact. They have millions and millions, but as we both know from managing affiliate programs, you have millions of affiliates, but most of them are bad and you never want to work with them and they're never going to do anything. Typically, you might get up to a program of like 6,000 plus affiliates. And of that, 60 to 100 are actually driving sales. Yeah. So the approach with Everflow was just to choose curated partners that have proven results and make it an instant connection. Like you invite them to your platform, they accept, it connects the two systems together and automatically feeds your offer into their platform for promotion. And all of the partners in there are all like already doing millions and millions of sales and revenue per month. So they have a ton of scale, or they do something really cool or innovative. Like we have a ton of media buyers doing like native advertising, Facebook, Google, on behalf of the brand. And then finally, we just have really neat opportunities like Gridwise, which is like a social network and utility app for rideshare drivers. So we break it into massive scale, media buying excellence, or a unique opportunity that's good to brag to your boss about.
That's awesome. I love that. It's something you can brag to your boss about. That's a good category. That's probably,
it's very important when you're agency.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because they're asking questions. You're like, I got to answer these and, you know, and be able to explain it to them how this is working.
Yeah, because I mean, you can say like, oh, I recruited this extra like performance affiliate and they're driving 1,000 sales in it. It's like nice, but they're just like, okay, growth is good. Whereas like when you have a few cool opportunities, those are the ones you bring up on your weekly meetings to impress them.
Yeah, to seem to be cool, still be cool, to save yourself for another week, try to get to that IPO and buy a house in Oakland somewhere. I get it. Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, and then the other part I was going to explain is just like the origin of the company, because I think that that makes a big difference. So the thing to keep in mind with Everflow is that we were launched on November of 2016. And I think even our youngest competitors is almost 10 years old now. And technology has advanced a lot. And what you're built on makes a huge determination of like what you can do. So the background of Everflow was that the three co-founders launched one of the first mobile ad tech or mobile affiliate networks, Mula Media. Mm-hmm. So they grew that up in the very early days of mobile. And then eventually it was acquired by Opera, which then acquired Ad Colony and rebranded as Ad Colony. They had a huge successful exit. They spent their years vesting. They looked around the ecosystem. They realized that no one had really built a new platform that solved a lot of the pain points that they'd experienced. And so they started Everflow in 2016. And like, we've just had gangbuster success. We're a bootstrap company. They self-funded, and we just run on profit ever since. And we're up to 600 plus customers. I think we're at like about 8-9 million ARR right now. So it's been just a rocket ship growth. And because we started much later, the entire platform was built on Google Cloud. And having an infrastructure around cloud means that we were always built with the capability of having all of our data accessible in real time. So a great example of that is we have an analytics report in our system where you can say like, I want to know the performance of partner A. When you click partner A, you can filter it out so it shows you every single placement delivered by partner A. And then you can click on any of those placements and see the individual metrics for that single placement and have everything filter around that. Like that sort of like real-time data comparison makes things that used to be important but were extremely tedious, so they could only be done like once in a while. Mm-hmm. Something you can do regularly on a daily basis. And that completely changes your ability to manage a program and scale it.
Yeah, that's beauty, right? I mean, that's, you know, in the past, that's always been such a headache, and to be able to get that done and be able to just show that in your guys' dashboard. But I think what you're touching on, and I know this firsthand, is that it's only a four-year-old company, but it's the background of how they built it, knowing that they were going to scale in the different things. Because a lot of these older affiliate networks are built on older softwares and older stuff that's going to be difficult. So they're going to have to redo some things, and it's not happening. They're still built. They're making money off the old stuff, but there's a new way to do things. And so I think that's what you guys are doing.
Yeah. And then the other things with that too, is just like mobile has so many challenges, like trying to upgrade your system to handle like mobile traffic and mobile performance and app installs. Like there's so many challenges there too. And yet they offer this, they just can't ever do it well because it requires like a fundamental redesign internally. And yeah, the other thing I was going to get to with like the veteran team is just like, they knew what needed to be built in the market. So we always had that groundwork of like, we knew that like with mobile, like you're not dealing with 100,000 clicks, you're dealing with billions of clicks. So I think our biggest clients are doing like 5 billion clicks per month, which is unthinkable in the desktop world. No one does 5 billion clicks in it. And to handle that kind of volumes requires an infrastructure built to massively scale up to that. And you need to have that design in place in the early days. And that's not something you can like build later without overhauling your entire company and ruining a lot of stuff that's already working.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That 5 billion clicks on mobile.
It's crazy.
Lord, that's insane. Thanks, Michael. It's been a great conversation. I'm sure our audience learned a few new tricks about improving their affiliate marketing programs. But it doesn't stop here. I still have a lot more questions for you. On the next episode, we'll talk about the differences between affiliate marketing and referral marketing, so stay tuned.